Happy freaking Friday. The weekend is finally here. We did it. Now, if you heard the Daily Show, you know that I've got a bunch of baseball games to run around to, so I will be in the car with the kids, which means I need that sled running smoothly, tip top. Let me take a moment and talk to you about your car, or boat, or lawnmower, or RV, or all of the above. Stabil products keep them all running smoothly year after year, providing protection for every engine you own. Every Stabil product is specially formulated to treat each of your vehicles or equipment differently, whether they're on the road, in the water, or in your backyard tool shed. They have a product for anything with a motor. Stabil products have been recommended by over 100 original equipment manufacturers and have been used and trusted by consumers for 60 years. Whether for day-to-day use or during long periods of storage, you can rely on Stabil's powerful fuel additives to protect your vehicle or equipment from today's fuels. You want to visit StabilRadio.com for more information. Once again, StabilRadio.com to get all the information you need. Do it now.
Live from Southern California, this is the Jim Rome Show.
Let me do something a little bit different. The first round of the NFL draft went down, so let me start by giving you my grades. Why don't we start in the NFC East and the Dallas Cowboys? Because they took Leighton Vander Esch, a linebacker out of Boise State. And I'm going to start right there, and I'm going to give that a grade of... Yeah, because that's what I'm about. Yeah, I'm not going to do that. I mean, I could. I could spend the entire program running down every single team, grading every single pick from last night, and then projecting who they're going to take next. But I'm not going to do that because, for the most part, it's like throwing darts blindfolded. There are certainly some picks I liked. There are some picks that I didn't like. But we're really not going to know what did and did not work for a couple of years, right? There's no way of knowing. However, there is one grade that I can give you right now, and that grade is for the commissioner, Roger Goodell. More specifically, the commissioner's effort to use Roger Staubach, Troy Aikman, and Jason Witten as shields against the traditional boos that rain down on the commissioner when he shows up. I've got a grade for that, and that grade is F-. Check out this reception.
Welcome, football fans, to the 2018 NFL Draft, Texas style. I can't believe you guys are booing the Cowboys. Come on. Thank you all for being here, and for all of you tuning in across the country to welcome our future NFL stars.
Yeah, that was smooth, Raj. Really smooth. Holy crap. Nice try with that, Commissioner. I mean, did you really think that the fans were going to say to themselves, I'm here to boo the old man? Oh, but wait. There are our dudes. There's Raj. There's Troy. There's Jason. Those are my dudes. I can't boo them. What do I do? Yeah, nice try with that. Gary Bettman can't believe how badly the commissioner just got booed. A nice effort by the commissioner to use those shields. And then when it didn't work, to go with that little blast, I can't believe you guys are booing the Cowboys. I mean, come on.
I can't believe you guys are booing the Cowboys.
Yeah, because they're not. They're not. They're booing you. They're making that very clear. All right, couple of things to take away from that. Number one, Cowboy fans, they've got some serious lung. They can bring the boo. Secondly, the only thing stronger than the booing was Roger's arm. That dude still has a cannon. Did you see him fire that football? He didn't just drop that one in the first row. That was no dump off. That was not him checking off. That was a 76-year-old man going deep. And he still has a better arm than Chad Henne.
Hey-oh!
However, with the traditional booing of the commissioner over, then it was time to get down to business. And by getting down to business, I mean Cleveland getting down the way they did, getting on the clock, digging into the batter's box, and then taking a huge swing by taking this guy.
With the first pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select Baker Mayfield, quarterback, Oklahoma.
Man, freaking love it. What a brass move that was. I mean, really, an amazing pick. And I don't want to hear from anybody saying that they called that because you didn't. because nobody did. Everybody had called everybody in that spot. So zero credit to the prognosticators and huge credit to Cleveland GM John Dorsey. That takes a brass set. That's a monster move. Dorsey controlled the draft. He could pick anybody he wanted, and he looked at that draft board and said, let's do this. Why the hell not? Why the hell not? I've only got two words for that, and those were the two words that the Browns tweeted out. He. That goes back to that story about Hugh Jackson and the story he told about Baker Mayfield being the Pied Piper.
I kind of feel like he's the Pied Piper of Oklahoma football. You know, the workout, I will share this with you. When we walked into the building, he made this sound. He just kind of came out of nowhere. He went, kind of went, hee-hee. And all the players in the building started going, hee-hee. I mean, and here they go. I mean, it's the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen. That shows you something about what he means to young men and how he leads them. And that's who Baker Mayfield is.
Hee-hee. It's a good tweet. It's a good tweet and a good story. Yeah, but don't take it from the guy who is about to coach him. Yesterday, I asked the guy who had been coaching him what Baker was like to coach and be around. Lincoln Riley said it was an absolute blast.
A lot of fun. The main reason that he was fun to coach was, you know, even after he had some success early in his career here, he always wanted to get better. He always let me coach him hard, always responded the right way, and was hungry to get better. And you appreciate that about a guy, because human nature, a lot of times when we have some success, says, well, this is going good, I kind of got it now, and we get on a little bit of a cruise control.
So his college coach actually, obviously, loved him, which is part of the reason why Cleveland loved him. I mean, yeah, there are those 12,000 passing yards, the 119 touchdowns. He's got an attitude and a swagger that a lot of guys don't have. And I know the plan. This is key. I know the plan is to have him sit behind Tyrod Taylor. But Baker Mayfield has got a history of vaulting over depth charts. He's not just a live arm for practice. This guy takes jobs. He was a walk-on at Texas Tech. He started as a true freshman. He was a walk-on again at Oklahoma, and then he started. He was a walk-on twice, and then he won the Heisman Trophy. I mean, let me repeat that. A walk-on who won the Heisman Trophy. A walk-on who won the Heisman Trophy, and then parlayed that into becoming the top pick overall in the NFL draft. This guy freaking walked on in college. And a few years later is the top pick overall. So hate on this guy all you want, but that is just literally one of the greatest stories in sports history. It just is. So this guy proves doubters and haters wrong because he lives for that bleep. And if he and the Browns pull this off, it's going to be even more legendary than anything he's already done in an already legendary career. I mean, the guy already is a living, talking, walking miracle. Now, I'm not saying the pick's without risk. I do think top to bottom, Sam Darnold was the best quarterback prospect coming out. It would have been the safe pick. And considering how badly the Browns have jacked up their quarterback picks in the past, you could see why they would just stay in their lane and not assume any additional risk. But they didn't. And that's why I love that. And I hate that tired old line about how either you love a guy or you hate a guy, but it applies to this guy. And I love that guy. Yes, he runs hot. Yes, I'd be lying if I said that didn't concern me on some level. But everything else about this guy overrides it. He's electric. I don't care if he's short by quarterback standards. He can make every throw. He's a great playmaker. He's accurate. He's a winner. He's done it on the biggest stages. And yes, the dude is running on rocket fuel. I love the guy. And I love that pick. Again, I can't guarantee he'll dominate. I can't guarantee he'll step in, and 15 years out, he'll have a mustard jacket. But I know this. This guy ain't Johnny Manziel. And the guy who made the pick, John Dorsey, was not having any of that comparison. Quote, in doing all of our research with Baker Mayfield, he has earned it. From high school to college, he has earned it. When he gets to Oklahoma, he begins to learn the playbook in 3 days. I have no qualms whatsoever about him as a man or a football player. I mean, I can go on and on and on about this guy. I could do an entire hour on this guy. I love the pick. Is it going to work? I mean, I don't know for certain. Nobody does. But then again, nobody knows whether or not Sam Darnold or Josh Allen or Josh Rosen would work in Cleveland. Because nobody really knows anything. And because of the list of quarterbacks who have succeeded in Cleveland for the last two decades is non-existent. But I know this. I love this pick. And if it doesn't work out, don't look for me to crack on these guys. Because right now, that pick makes that team that won one game in the last 2 years must-see TV. And you can thank Dorsey and Baker Mayfield for that. An entire open on the pick. I love it. I love it. Darnold, to me, top to bottom, was the best prospect coming out, but that is a gonad pick right there. That is stones. C-Town, how you feeling about it? Happy weekend, y'all. What's going on? What are you going to do? Are you going to check out the rest of the NFL draft? Are you heading out on the road? You know we have to keep that whip looking fresh. Like sports, car care is a game of numbers, and the best number for your car is 303 Automotive Premium Protectants and Cleaners, designed to clean, shine, and protect. 303 products undergo rigorous testing to ensure superior performance and outstanding protection and to bring out that show car finish. Inside and out, interior and exterior. From your dashboard to your tires, 303 keeps your car looking new, longer. 303. We've got your number. For more information, visit my pals at 303radio.com. That's 303radio.com. Pull up your browser, hit them up, look good on the road this weekend. Daniel Jeremiah, busy but finding time for the jungle. Daniel, good morning. What's up? How are you?
I'm doing great, Jim. What's up, man?
What's up, man? You had a good night last night. I watched you. I thought you did a great job. How'd that go for you?
It was a lot of fun, man. It was, you know, all the quarterbacks. You have that many quarterbacks and all the different teams interested in them. It created for some fun drama in there, no doubt.
All right, so what about the top of the draft? What was your reaction when you saw the Browns take Baker Mayfield?
Well, I've been hearing some buzz about it for a little while, and then I just kind of said, you know, smoke screen, whatever. And then the night before, you know, I had so many people tell me, no, this is really happening. So I ended up kind of putting that in my mock draft yesterday morning and kind of just went with it. So even though I heard it and even though I kind of bought in, you still had to hear the name called before you're 100% certain that's exactly what they were doing. I mean, I think Baker's a really good player. I do, but I don't think he was the best quarterback in this draft.
So what's that pick tell you about the way John Dorsey is approaching that rebuild in Cleveland?
I think, Jim, you look at it, and this team, I can't even said it last night. I mean, they've done two things really well, and that's lose football games and lose the football. So you go out and get Tyrod Taylor and Baker Mayfield, two guys, you know, Tyrod coming off a playoff season, Baker have one of those games at Oklahoma, and both those guys really protect the ball. So the identity of the team, to me, looks like let's build a defensive team, a defensive dominant team, and let's try and get a quarterback that's not going to lose games for us and take care of the football. That seems to be the way that they're looking to go.
Now you've heard the comparisons maybe to Russell Wilson, maybe to Brett Favre. He had that great tweet the night before with he and Favre. You've compared him, though, to Jeff Garcia. What makes you see, or what have you seen in him that makes you feel that way?
Yeah, because you got two undersized guys. I don't think, look, the Russell Wilson, he's not nearly the athlete that Russell Wilson is. That's not close, in my opinion. And then when you look at Drew Brees, is another one. Drew is... he's on another level in terms of how he operates in the pocket, how he works through progressions and can make every kind of throw. So I can't compare him to one of those guys. So I'm looking for kind of an undersized quarterback that can move around a little bit, but it's not looking to run all the time. To me, that was Jeff Garcia. And even some of their mannerisms, they're real fidgety and frenetic and real busy, the best way I can kind of describe it. So some of their mannerisms even remind me of that. And Garcia, when he was... you know, when he was in that offense early on with T.O., went to a couple Pro Bowls and was pretty darn effective.
Daniel Jeremiah, NFL Network analyst, joining us. The NFL Network has got live coverage of rounds 2 and 3 tonight, starting at 7 p.m. Eastern. So what do you make of Saquon Barkley going number 2 overall to the Giants? I mean, I guess you could make an argument that you can't justify taking a running back that high, even that running back. But do you like that pick? And then how much does that change the offense and Eli Manning's life?
You know, I could have gone either way with it. He's the best player in the draft, so I get it. I understand it. And they're going to be a better football team next year because of making that decision. I just think, man, you've had 14 years with Eli Manning, which is you know, rare to have that long of a run with one quarterback. But he's 37 years old, and you've got a 20-year-old Sam Darnold staring at you. You could have another 14-year run with a quarterback. So that's what I would have done. I get it. Saquon Barkley's a better player than Sam Darnold, but you're picking all the way up there, and you got a chance to get a quarterback. I think that's, in the long run, I think that's the right decision.
Right, so what do you think the Jets were thinking when they're sitting there with the third pick and Darnold is still on the board? How hyped were they, and what do you make of that fit? How do you think he'll do there?
Well, I got a text from one of their executives. It was just the thumbs-up emoji, so I figured that was pretty excited.
Right.
I don't think when they made that trade, which was really a blind trade, you know, pretty unusual to make a move like that, not knowing who's going to be there to get to 3, I don't think they imagined at that point in time Sam Darnold would be staring at him. So it ended up working out for him. The one thought I had this morning as I was kind of looking over all this stuff, Jim, was, you know, the Colts got three twos to go from 3-6, which is a heck of a haul. You know, the Jets had to overpay. But what if they'd have waited? What if they'd have waited until last night, and then Sam Darnold is there at number three? I just kind of wonder, maybe they could even have got more than those three twos.
You know, it's true, especially in this draft, Daniel, where you can get such value in the second round and the third round. And then you go to the fourth pick overall, where Cleveland comes back. And the thought had been that maybe they go with Bradley Chubb to partner with Myles Garrett. Instead, they take Denzel Ward out of Ohio State. You had Chubb as the second best player on your top 50. Ward is the fourth best. So what's your reaction with that pick?
Yeah, I mean, again, Ward's a great player, no doubt. But you had a chance to get the premier pass rusher in the draft. So in my opinion, you go the best quarterback and then you take the best player, which would have been Chubb. So that would have been the way that I would have gone. I heard that they were in on Ward. I had him actually in a mock draft trading back and taking him. But, hey, they didn't think that that was worth the risk of trading back and hoping he was there. That was their guy. And the two biggest needs when you just look at their roster was quarterback and cornerback. Those are two areas they had to address. So that's the area they decided to go. It is kind of funny to me, though, because knowing guys that know John Dorsey and haven't been around him and the old Packers and they're with the Chiefs, they always talk about traits and size. And here they go. They draft two undersized guys with their first two picks.
Huh. Daniel Jeremiah joining us. All right, so what do you make about what Buffalo did? They take Josh Allen over Josh Rosen. And when you look at Allen and all the questions about his accuracy, you've made the point that he throws a lot of passes on a line and flat. How big of an issue could that be?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna really matter how you construct the offense. I mean, you can go back to Colin Kaepernick, who had some of the same concerns. You know, when he was with Harbaugh, they had a great running game, so all their passing attack was off of play action. You're throwing drive throws on comebacks, you're throwing skinny posts. He was very comfortable in that type of a setup, and he thrived. Cam Newton's the same way. If you can run the ball heavy and then be able to take those shots, he's really good. He's not going to just sit back there and pick you apart and make over-under throws and layer throws. That's the same kind of issue that Josh Allen's going to have. So their biggest challenge now, Jim, they lost three offensive linemen in the offseason. So they have got to get some help here in the rest of this draft to get this offensive line up and running, because Josh Allen without a running game is going to be very challenging.
We're covering a lot of ground. Daniel Jeremiah for a couple of more moments on the program. So Allen goes to Buffalo, which of course means Arizona's got a chance to trade up and they get Josh Rosen. How do you like the fit of Rosen in Arizona?
Yeah, I mean, Jim, if he doesn't beat out Sam Bradford in training camp, I'll be shocked. I mean, I think he'll be the first one of these rookie quarterbacks to get on the field. I think he'll get a chance to get out there right away, and he's fortunate because he has the one luxury that none of these other rookie quarterbacks will have. And that's having David Johnson. So I think he not only has a chance to get on the field, I think he's got a chance to be successful pretty early on.
Daniel, Sam Bradford, wouldn't that be something? That'd be like, and no disrespect, and of course when somebody says no disrespect, somebody might get disrespected, but would that not be the most Sam Bradford thing ever? Come in there, get your 20 mil, get beat out by the kid. I mean, I guess Sam wins either way.
Yeah, hey, every Tuesday, as long as that thing cashes, we're good.
We're talking to Daniel Jeremiah. All right, so back in the day, one of your jobs was calling in the picks for the Ravens. What's the first day of the draft like for scouts and front office personnel who are in the rooms and making the decisions at the board?
Oh, it's fun, man. If you're with the right group, it's actually really chill, you know. I see the images and hear about stories of all the chaos and the scrambling around. Like, you're doing it wrong, man. We've had a long time to get ready for this thing. You should have all mapped out. You've got your order all set. It's kind of just paint by numbers. Do you sit there with your list like you would do if you're running a fantasy football draft and check them off one by one? If you don't like who's there, you trade out. If you're worried about, you know, somebody that you really like, you think you got to go up and get them, you do it. But it's the good ones, you know, haven't been around Ozzie Newsome, who I think is the best. It's pretty calm and pretty patient in there.
All right, so leave us with that thought. The Ravens move up to 32 and they get Lamar Jackson. You've been in the draft room with Ozzie Newsome in the past. Knowing him as you do, what do you think went into that trade and that selection?
Well, I think it was very calculated. I think when you go back to them bringing in RG3, kind of made some sense to kind of, okay, we could try to introduce a new way of offense here once we move on from Joe Flacco. So that was the first sign. You're sitting at 16. You wanted a tight end. You knew you didn't have to take him there, so you trade back, get extra picks. You still get the top tight end. Then you can use some of these extra picks to come back in and get Lamar at 32, where you can get that fifth year on a contract. So to me, it was very thought out. It was very calculated, and it was very smart. And there's definitely some risk involved there, Jim, but I thought it was definitely worth the risk, no question.
Baker Mayfield, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen off the board, which meant one member of the Big Four was still available, Josh Rosen. And you could tell from the cutaway shots, only the cutaway shots, that he was not happy about that. And it was awesome. Not because I like seeing shots of potential draft picks suffering, but because you could tell his motivation was rising every second and that chip on his shoulder was getting bigger and bigger with each passing pick. And when Arizona moved up to number 10 to take him, the wait was over. Not the wait for Rosen to find a team, but the wait for Rosen to unload on everybody who didn't take him. And he brought the heat as only Josh Rosen can, starting with this line to ESPN. Quote, "I'm more motivated than I've ever been in my entire life." End quote. Well, considering how motivated this guy's been to this point, that's saying something. But he was only getting started. He later said, and this is an amazing quote, "There were 9 mistakes made ahead of me. I will make sure over the next decade or so, they know they made a mistake." You know, I'm not sure if that's red hot or ice cold. Honestly, it's a combination of both, and I love it. He's not saying that because he thinks like that sounds like a good soundbite or that it's going to fire up the Cardinal fans, although it does, and it should. But this is coming from something much deeper than that. And then he drops another great line, quote, "Maybe if I could, or if I had shut up these last 3 years, I could have been picked higher," end quote. Yeah, maybe, possibly, but I'm glad you didn't shut up over the last 3 years because that's what makes this guy so unique. That's what makes this guy different. And he was pissed, majorly pissed, and was not afraid to show that either. And that's not me saying that. That's Rosen himself saying that. Again, quote, "I was pretty pissed when I fell and 1, 2, 3 went by and I was really angry. Teams were passing on me. I was honestly expecting to get picked at some point and have to fake a smile and pretend to be happy. But for some reason, when I got picked, all that went away and I just went straight to excitement and relief. The biggest thing was definitely motivation and I feel determined. I'm just more motivated than ever," end quote. So when he was asked why he thought so many teams passed on him, he was not going to speculate. Quote, "I don't know. I don't care. I'm happy it happened. I'm really happy it happened. I'm glad I'm at number 10. I'm glad the cards came up and got me. I really think it's a match made in heaven. I wouldn't change anything. You guys might call BS on me, but complete honesty from the bottom of my heart, there's not another team that I'd rather go to." Yeah, I gotta tell you, if I were him, I'd feel the exact same way. Look at what he's going to. Larry Fitzgerald, David Johnson, playing in Arizona. A perfect fit for him and for the Cards, who just got the most pro-ready quarterback in the draft and the most motivated quarterback in the draft. And the greatest quote in years. I love this guy's reaction, and I love where this guy's going, and I love that draft pick from the Cards. Yeah, I know it sounds like I'm only saying how much I love everything, but I really do love Baker Mayfield at the top, and I love this guy going to Arizona. And most of all, I love his reaction. He also said something to the effect of, "If it were up to me, I'd get on an airplane right now, head straight there, and start working this very second." Man, he was pissed and didn't try to hide it. Steve Keim is my guest. Steve, it's great to have you back on. How are you?
Romy, doing great. Appreciate you having me on.
Really good to have you on, Steve. I know you got a busy day ahead of you, but let me get your thoughts on last night. If you go back, Steve, before the start of the day yesterday, what was your mindset and what was your approach going into the first round?
Well, I think number one, we had to be patient and trust our board. Yet at the same time, you know, I had a feeling that based on some of the thoughts, you know, ahead of us, that there would be one or two of those quarterbacks that slid. And, you know, Josh Rosen was a guy that we had our eye on all along. And we were sitting there at 15, and I'm not sure whether he would have lasted to 15 or not, but I certainly didn't want to take the chance. And to me, it was worth being aggressive enough, yet at the same time, not mortgaging the future by preserving our two and at least next year's one, where I can still have some ammo to build around the player. And to me, we got the best pure passer in this draft, a guy who's got great natural mechanics for the position and has a chance to be a real, real franchise quarterback.
We're talking to Steve Keim. You know, to that point, Steve, if I had said to you before the draft, you've got a chance to move up and get this guy, a guy that you had been looking at without mortgaging your future, what would you have said to that?
Well, I mean, it would have been hard to believe. And it goes back probably 3 years ago. I'll never forget, I was at UCLA's practice, and a friend of mine, Noel Mazzoni, who was offensive coordinator, came up to me and said, "Hey, man, 3 years you'll be back. You know, this kid is going to be the number one pick in the draft. He's got a bright future. He's got all the physical tools, and he's got the mental makeup you look for. And so to be able to follow him throughout his career, see the things that he's done at UCLA, see his natural skill set, and then getting to know the person this offseason, we're really excited about him moving forward.
Steve Keim joining us. You know, I love this guy's attitude so much, and the fact that he will tell you what's on his mind. For example, he made it very clear, Steve, that he was not happy about the 9 teams that he thinks made a mistake by not selecting him. He was fired up that you drafted him. So what was your reaction when you hear him say, quote, "I was pissed. I was really, really angry about being passed over"?
Well, you know, you got to love the confidence. But at the same time, you know, he's got to channel that enthusiasm and excitement and put that chip on his shoulder and do it between the lines. And I have no doubt that he's going to be a great fit with our new offensive coordinator, Mike McCoy, who's coached a couple of different guys with that mentality, like Phillip Rivers and Peyton Manning. You know, two guys that will challenge you, that'll tell you they want more on their plate, whether it's more from a schematical standpoint or to be given more responsibility to line of scrimmage. You know, to me, that's how Josh is wired. And the more you challenge him, the more he'll excel.
Yeah, Steve, I see it the same way. I never understood that rap that, hey, maybe the guy asked too many questions. Maybe he's too smart for his own good. This guy's questioning authority. I mean, doesn't every great quarterback want to know? Don't they challenge coaches on every single level? Isn't that what you want from your quarterback?
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, you know, we got guys nowadays that are, you know, getting DUIs and failing drug tests and having domestic abuse issues. And this guy, all he does is go to UCLA, start 3 years, two-time captain, and a 3.8 in economics at UCLA. So I don't know what character is anymore, I guess. But, you know, to me, this is the kind of guy you want running the offense.
Steve Keim joining us. What about that phone call? When you made the call to Rosen to tell him that he was drafted, what was that phone call like?
Oh, he was fired up. He said, "I promise I won't let you down." And I told him that's exactly why we picked him, because we believe in him. And, you know, I think he's going to have a bright future. Again, I think it's a good situation for him. We signed Sam Bradford and Mike Glennon in the offseason. Both guys have experience as NFL starters. We know when Sam's healthy that he can spin it as well as anybody. So it's a good situation. He'll come in, he'll be able to learn, but it's on him. I mean, he's got to grow and develop, and we'll put a lot on his plate. And from there, you know, as far as how fast he'll play, that's up to him.
In fact, you know I was going there next, Steve. What about that? How fast will he play? How do you see it playing out? Is there going to be an open quarterback competition?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Wilkes has made that clear. Our new head coach has got a great mindset that he's going to play the best 11, and the best 11 that give us a chance to succeed. So I have no doubt that Josh is going to come in and compete. You know, again, how far along he is, understanding the system and being NFL ready, we'll see. But it's a great situation to have a quarterback room with guys like those three. And again, there's nothing like competition at every position.
Especially for a young quarterback, too, to step into a situation where you've got David Johnson at running back, you've got Larry Fitzgerald at wide receiver, and then you mentioned your coach, Steve Wilks. You and I have not had a chance to catch up since he arrived as head coach. I've got to say, though, even from a media standpoint, just talking to this guy fired me up. What were your conversations with him like, and what sold you on him as the right man to lead this team?
Well, Michael Bill and I went out on a couple weeks of interviews, and really just felt like this guy had a commanding presence to him. And that's what it was all about. It wasn't hiring an offensive coordinator or a defensive coordinator. We wanted to find the right leader for the Arizona Cardinals. And when you talk to Steve Wilks, you can tell that his passion, his enthusiasm, and his leadership is infectious. So when we sat down with him, you know, both Michael and I looked at each other, and we had no doubt that this was the right man to lead our organization moving forward. You know, Bruce Arians set a great culture here, put us in a place moving forward where we have a good thing going. But, you know, Steve Wilks now has the ability to step in and put his own fingerprints on this team, and we're really excited about the future here.
Arizona Cards GM Steve Keim joins us for a few more moments. You know, based on our conversations that you and I have had in the past, I know you're not happy with an 8-8 record last season, despite the injuries that the team dealt with. So how hungry are you to get that thing turned around, and then how quickly can it get back to where you're used to being?
Well, big time, and you nailed it, Romy. I mean, you know, the good thing about what we've done here is we've changed the expectations. So 8-8 isn't good enough, and our goal every year is to win a championship. It starts with the NFC West. There's no doubt that our division is getting tougher with San Francisco and the Rams, what they're doing, and we know Seattle is going to have a good football team. But you know what? I wouldn't have it any other way, because, you know, to me, competition is what we all look forward to, and to me, the NFC AFC West is going to continue to get stronger and stronger, particularly now that we all have young quarterbacks moving forward.
All right, so what does the rest of today look like for you before the start of the second round?
Well, just like we had talked about, I mean, you know, the one thing is preserving that too. We gave away a third, and we still have another third. So we're going to be able to continue to add playmakers around Josh. There's no doubt there's some different positions that we want to address. But at the same time, we're not going to veer away from my philosophy, which is taking the best player available. We know that your needs in April and May are always changing compared to October and November. You just can't have enough good football players. So our needs today are going to be changing, and there's no doubt that, again, taking the best player available is the best right and mindset to have.
He is the 2014 NFL Executive of the Year, and they got their guy last night in Josh Rosen. The 15th pick in the second round goes to Arizona tonight as well. Steve, I know you're busy. So good to have you on the show. Thanks for sharing your thoughts. Have a great night.
Thanks so much, Romy. Always a pleasure.
Tom Haberstroh is my guest. Tom, it's good to have you back on. How are you?
I'm good. Can't complain.
Good, man. Good. Nice to talk to you. You know, tonight gives us game six of Cleveland, Indiana, game six of the OKC Utah series, also game six of Toronto, Washington. But the first two I mentioned had a pair of ridiculous game fives. Which performance was more impressive to you? LeBron single-handedly carrying the Cavs to victory or Russell Westbrook and Paul George dragging the Thunder back from the dead, Tom?
Oh, it's got to be what the Russell Westbrook and Paul George show did. I mean, it was incredible watching that game. I thought there was almost zero chance that they were going to come back from that 25-point deficit. We've seen LeBron James do this, where he puts the team on his back and carries them across the finish line. What we haven't seen is the Thunder looking like that any time in this season. I mean, they were unstoppable in that third quarter. And I will say this, I don't think that happens if Rudy Gobert doesn't pick up his fourth foul, what seemed like a phantom fourth foul, because they are so good at defending Russell Westbrook with Rudy Gobert. He's kind of his kryptonite out there. He's the best defender in the NBA. I think he's the defensive player of the year because he's so long. He covers so much ground and really hurts the Thunder at their toughest spot, which is around the rim. If Russell Westbrook can't go north to south and get into the paint, the Thunder can't do anything. And in that game, when he checked out, the Thunder just took off. And in that series, the Thunder have 400 fewer passes than the Utah Jazz. I'm going to repeat that, 400 fewer passes than the Utah Jazz. And it's just a lot of stand-around offense watching Russell Westbrook. But when they get going like they did in that third quarter, it's amazing to watch. The rest of the game, not so much.
Tom Haberstroh joining us. I think you're going to get there in a second, Tom, but you've compared the Thunder offense to cherry soda. Lay that out for me. What do you mean by that?
Everyone seems to like cherry soda, but it makes me gag. Like, a lot of people like watching Russell Westbrook play in that offense, but it makes me gag. I think it was because when I was sick as a kid, the whole cherry thing, when I was sick as a kid, I would have cough syrup, and it was always cherry flavor, and it just always made me gag afterwards. And it's weird because everyone loves Russell Westbrook, the whole defiant, like, why not mentality, but ultimately, he's an inefficient, high-volume scorer, and everyone stands around and watches him play. Scotty Brooks, you know, the thing about Scotty Brooks coaching that team was it was an uncreative offense. There just wasn't a lot of ball movement. There wasn't a lot of off-ball movement. They just stood around and watched Russell Westbrook go. And it's the same thing with Billy Donovan's offense around Russ. Is that they stand around, they have the fewest number of miles traveled, we can track that now, the fewest distance of offense. So the bodies aren't moving, the ball is not moving, and it's just, you know what, it's not appealing basketball. Not every team has to be the Spurs passing the ball and the Philadelphia 76ers pass the ball and everyone gets a touch, but ultimately, I don't know. It just feels like the NFL, if they got rid of passing and just ran the ball every time, that's kind of what I get from the OKC offense.
Tom Haberstroh joining us. All right, so the analytics do not lie. The metrics don't lie. What about the Jazz? How do you think the Jazz respond to that Game 5 loss? And in your opinion, are they just the better team?
I think they are. I actually predicted when Gordon Hayward left, I actually predicted in the summer that they would win about 48 games, almost 50 games. I did a bet with Zach Lowe of ESPN, a steak dinner over the Utah Jazz, because I really felt the Gordon Hayward
Him moving to Boston solidified their identity, a defensive-minded juggernaut. No one was going to score against them. And over the summer, I said they were going to win 50 games. They ended up winning 48. I was close, but the idea is the same, is they defensively suffocate their opponents. And Rudy Gobert, when he's on the floor in game five, when he was on the floor, the Thunder scored 90 points per 100 possessions, a really bad total. But when he was off the floor, when he went to the bench, they scored 134 points per 100 possessions, an enormous gap. And that's the same thing for the rest of the series. When Rudy Gobert is on the floor, they're really, really good. They move the ball. Donovan Mitchell is electric. And it just goes to show, you don't have to run your entire offense through one player to get a high-volume score. His shots, Donovan Mitchell is shooting a whole bunch of shots and scoring a whole bunch of points, but they average so much more ball movement on their team. So I think Utah is going to win this game six on their home floor. I just think this OKC team is just too unimaginative offensively for them to win in the playoffs.
I think you're right. And that big three is actually a big two. I think Utah, just top to bottom, is a better team. I think they're a better team. They're a very difficult matchup. I think they're going to win that game too and close it out. All right, so where do you come out on LeBron and the four guys that aren't LeBron beating the Pacers in game five? I mean, how crazy is it that 15 years into LeBron's career, he's still having moments like he had in that game?
This might be the worst supporting cast he's ever had in the playoffs, Jim. I really believe that. Right now, he has 174 points scored by himself and another 100 points scored on assists. He's created 58% of the offense for the Cavs. Let me put this another way for you. He leads the Cavs in assists with 40. The next highest guy, Jeff Green, with 9. Jeff Green is not a playmaker. Jeff Green is a catch-and-shoot threat for that team. He catches the ball and dunks it, or he shoots three-pointers, and he's second on the roster in assists. They really miss Kyrie Irving, and of course the Isaiah trade absolutely hurt them, the fact that they didn't get another great playmaker in that deal. But the bottom line is they need more from Kevin Love. They need more from Rodney Hood and Jordan Clarkson, because it is inconceivable to have a guy in second place in assists named Jeff Green at 9. It's insanity. LeBron James, what he's doing right now is amazing. I don't think he's going to make it to the finals because the rest of the supporting cast is that good. Is not that good, and I think the Philadelphia 76ers are that good.
I'm going to ask you about them in 1 second. One more thought about LeBron, though. I mean, you're somebody who spent a lot of time thinking about and writing about fitness and how NBA players take care of themselves. So how do you explain LeBron still being at this level in his 15th season after 7 straight trips to the finals?
I mean, I don't know how to explain it. It is at ESPN, when I was there over the last several years, we were kind of saying, like, he at some point is going to fall off. Like, he is going to get fatigued, and it's not going to happen for him. He's eventually going to fall off. And it hasn't happened. You know, he played all 82 games this season. He spends more money on his body than just about any player in the NBA. I would venture to guess it's twice as much as any player in the NBA, because that is his temple. That is his ticket. If he's healthy, he's the most dominant player in the NBA. He just needs the right supporting cast around him. I'm not so sure they have the right shooters and combination of two-way players. And Jim, I think they miss Tristan Thompson, who has vanished from this team, and he was a starter on that squad.
Tom Haberstroh joining us. Tom, you mentioned the Sixers. You made the point that Joel Embiid and Ben Simmons aren't just good, but they're the best combo in the NBA since November 1st. I mean, that's better than James Harden and Chris Paul, better than Steph Curry and Kevin Durant, better than anybody. How good are they purely from a statistical standpoint?
When they're on the floor, Jim, they outscore opponents by 17 points per 100 possessions since November 1st. And I want to make sure we mention that since November 1st, because for the first month of the season, Ben Simmons was really struggling to find his groove in the NBA. He's a rookie. And ever since then, when he found his groove, they've been unstoppable. When you look at Chris Paul and James Harden, they're not 17 points better than their opponents. When you look at LeBron James and any teammate, he's not even close. If you're looking at the best duos in the NBA, purely from a numbers perspective, when they are on the floor, they just dominate the opponent. And in that Miami series, that actually got better. It went from 17 points every 100 possessions to 19 points. And you know what?
I think Joel Embiid is just getting started here because that mask was a total deterrent. He did not look very confident in that mask, pulling it off every opportunity. I think in this next series, we're going to see another level of Ben Simmons and Joel Embiid just getting that chemistry in the postseason because Joel Embiid didn't play for a month and then did that. It was really impressive. I think the sky is the limit for this team. The way that Brett Brown has coached them, it reminds me a lot of Shaq and Penny in 95.
Tom Haverstraw joining us. I think that Joel Embiid, I think even though he missed that much time, I think the playoff Joel is better than the regular season Joel. It's amazing. And he hates that mask, and the guy's still balling out completely. Now, Tom, you are the creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge, which started out as an idea. It became an enormous campaign. What have you and your mother, Patty, made of this entire thing?
We can't believe it, and I'm going to say it now. It really jumped when you nominated Nancy O'Dell. I mean, that was it. We've raised over $500,000 since Christmas when we started this. Our goal was $50,000, and personally, I think my mom and my whole family want to thank you for not just participating, but knowing the right people to nominate because. You know, this disease, it needs a cure. Every 90 minutes, someone dies from ALS, and we just can't catch up quick enough to find a cure. And that's what we're trying to do is find a cure. And we've raised over $500,000 for the ALS TDI Foundation. I think we're gonna find a cure for this thing. And we're that much closer thanks to you and the rest of the community that's really wrapped their heads around this pepper challenge. And you know what? My stomach might not like it because of all the peppers I've had, but I will eat 1,000 peppers if it means we get one step closer to an ALS cure.
Yeah, Tom, you and your family have done an absolute amazing job with this. Where do people go right now if they want to contribute?
ALS.net/pepper, or you can hit the hashtag ALS Pepper Challenge on Twitter and find it there. But ALS.net/pepper, make your donations there, and it's going to a good place at ALS TDI. They're doing an amazing job trying to find a cure for this disease. Look, Lou Gehrig had this disease decades ago, and we're still not that much closer to finding a cure. We need money, and everyone can help.
With the first pick in the 2018 NFL Draft, the Cleveland Browns select...
The week that was...
What's going on? A tremendous Tuesday to you. I am Jim Rome. Great to be back. I did not take a 3-day weekend. Actually, I had some show business, so I made a quick run to Houston, took care of my business there, got back. So no, that was not, hey, Rome, must be nice. Not the case. It's all good, though. I want to start in Salt Lake City. Week take late.
Yeah! Donovan rises 3. Ball game.
And yes, Thunder fan, now would be a real good time to panic. Your MVP, for maybe the first time in his life, is running smack and not backing it up.
Shut that off next game.
Snyder's a genius, so that Donovan kid had better coach these dudes up. Ben Golver is my guest.
Pretty quick 180 from Russell, wasn't it?
No, it was not about me or him.
No, I imagined when he made it all about him and Rubio that the Jazz locker room and their coaching staff was just sitting in a room giggling.
The reason I take so many vacation days is because I get so many vacation days. They had me off the air, flying to Houston to take care of jungle business. I worked.
I mean, it's expensive to self-publish these things. It's like almost $20,000.
Pull your bootstraps up, boy. I'm still doing repairs, man. I'm living like Giggling's Island or something down here.
Eddie Olchek joins us. Do you have an early pre-derby pick?
Yeah, you know what? I think there's a lot of pace in the race. If the race was this afternoon, Jim, I'd be going to the windows on good magic.
Andy Reid is my guest. How excited are you about the potential of the offense top to bottom?
I told Pepe this at Javier. I need to get Miguel up here to play a little quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
See, I was as excited to see you as you were me. You have a beautiful wife in Janet, your son, living in California, eating at Javier's 17-year birthday. And, I mean, come on. How much better does it get?
Never tell your players that you are expected to lose.
Going 6-17 and tanking implies you have a plan. But going 6-17 and not tanking implies you are terrible at your job.
Mentally weak.
It's not going well, G. It's not going well at all.
Call me delusional.
You're delusional. Dale Demps.
Good to be back. I'm a clone at heart, so I'm glad to be back here. Thanks for having me.
You might run into
George
some
Clooney.
Cougs. Not George Clooney. I've never seen him there.
Charles Oakley.
Oh, man, I wish I'd see Oak there. I have never seen Hope Solo. I would give anything to see Hope Solo there.
Does he?
Will not see her, I don't think.
Pedro Guerrero.
Definitely have not seen him there. Kurt Orban. Oh, dude, Orban would be amazing.
Louis Slungpew.
Slungpew will not be there. Yogi Roth is my man. Sweet potato tater tots. How did that go away? They were great, right?
It was superfood, man. Killed it. Sweet potato,
yeah,
too,
man. Yeah, they look amazing.
Yeah, it will change your life.
The lobster enchilada. Those went through me like cheese through a goose.
Ah! Come on, man. The lobster enchiladas. They have never gone through me like cheese through a goose.
I'm overweight. I'm overweight. Burrito.
He never really got to show how good he truly, truly was. We got to see some of it. There was still a whole lot left. So that's the hard part. We didn't get to see it all, what he really could have done.
Exuding class!
Junior. I know you would never do this. I know that you weren't brought up this way. I know you don't think this way. Never, ever go to social and say something regrettable. Better yet, never think anything regrettable. Don't see the world that way, and then you won't get into trouble. Lincoln Riley joining us. What was Baker like to coach?
The rise from a guy that was just trying to start here, and people said would never play in the NFL, never would do this and that. Here he is getting ready to be a first-round pick.
Three from dead center.
Do I have to do everything around here? Fuck. Performances Fuck. From LeBron. LeBron 3, Pacers 2.
Stop for greatness out here, cuz.
George McPhee.
Whatever you think of Vegas, when you live here and work here, it's the opposite. Great housing, parks, restaurants, churches, schools. We feel very, very fortunate to be able to live and work here.
Good golf, too,
oh,
right?
Oh, gosh. 10 courses, 10 minutes of
it
here.
Left three-pointer looks good. It is. Take it, everybody. It was looking like it was about time for OKC to rip out their golf clubs. Their season was over. The big three. Let's be real about that for a minute. Really, there's only a big two and some other dude.
OKC.
Dude, yes.
LeBron James.
Alvin, how did you do that?
I can't believe you guys are booing the Cowboys.
There's Raj. There's Troy. There's Jason. Those are my dudes. I can't boo them. What do I do? Yeah, nice try with that.
Come on.
Daniel Jeremiah.
9 mistakes ahead of me.
If he doesn't beat out Sam Bradford in training camp, I'll be shocked.
Steve Keim is my guest. Is there going to be an open quarterback competition?
Yeah, I mean, Coach Wilkes has made that clear. Josh is going to come in and compete. There's nothing like competition at every position.
The silk montage, brah.
Yeah, how about us? How you like us now? We took an offensive lineman that everybody knew we were going to pick. Yeah.
The best monotone caller with a lift.
Dingbat.
And last, we have the ones who have both, or what we call irritable bowel syndrome. And that really...
You save dying kids? You can't get through a phone call to a sports talk show. Tom Haverstraw joining us. You are the creator of the ALS Pepper Challenge.
We can't believe it. And I'm going to say it now. It really jumped when you nominated Nancy O'Dell. I mean, that was it.
Delicious.
Leave, Minnesota, leave!
Paul Gunther's double-A gap defense.
Ron Paulus.
Go crazy.
Aroxo Wilson!
How about Brad Childress?
Where are you?
My real boyfriend is currently in prison.
Guaranteed.
Speaking of the Browns, man.
Stop talking about fecal matter.
We stay LeBron.
Thank you for having me on, Jim.
Thanks so much, Romy.
Good to get caught up with you.
All right, Jim, man, you're the best.
Good night now!
Silk in Huntington Beach. What's up, brah?
Brah, what is up?
What's going on, Silk?
I know you always like to get a preview of my weekend, brah, so I'll let you know. There's some swell pushing in for this weekend, so I've already surfed and been to the gym this morning, and I'm putting the finishing touches while I'm listening to you on a crockpot pork ossobuco that Jen Silk and I will be enjoying tonight. And I believe she's bringing home some Napa Valley Farniente. We're going to have a couple different varietals, Brad. It's going to be awesome. And then tomorrow, more surf, more hangout. I'm kind of like Yogi Roth without the looks, the money, and the zen. But what I really wanted to do today is talk about the show itself, which is always the biggest topic. You know, I've been around for almost the entire evolution of the show. And the TV aspect has really brought out some really cool stuff. And one of them, I believe, is now when you watch the TV show, you can see pictures of the callers. It's pretty cool. I mean, I can see Matt in L.A. with his odd headgear. I can see Rex peacocking his Folex while he does his toilet talk takes. But what I want to do, my major announcement today, I have partnered with the CBS Sportsnet crew in New York. Because, you know, I'm always trying to take it to the next level, and I like to develop my brand and let everybody know what I'm all about. It is now we're introducing the silk montage, brah. There's not just one photo for me and what I do. There's a montage. So come on, New York, let's start flipping the photos so you can get an aspect of everything. Of course, there's one of me just got done surfing, got my wetsuit on. There's one of me in the classroom, poolside. It's a whole montage now, so that's going to be my new thing. To develop my brand and clones, Alvin, wait for it. Oh, there's one of me at Dodger Stadium. Clones, you need to, Alvin, here it comes, Step your games up.
Step your game up.
Bruh. Thanks, bruh. Thanks, bruh.
Silk bra. Bra. Silk bra. 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 Silk bra. Is it live or not? Bra. Bra.
Good night,